morning. My name is Leonardo Moreno, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Florida. I'm glad to be here and have the opportunity to share with you some results from my research project, Modeling Regrowth of Forage Grasses, Simulating Growth, Partitioning, and Carbon and Nitrogen Metabolism. I was considering changing the title to Modeling Burgers and Milkshake, because at the end of the day, growing grasses and pastures is the ultimate goal for that is having beef and milk, mostly. In the U.S., a big chunk of beef cows' life is spent on pastures, and grasslands cover an important portion of world's agricultural area, 250 million hectares only in the U.S. Grasslands also provide desired environmental services, among them carbon sequestration and storage in the soil. Mechanistic models, they describe growth processes and integrate them with physical environmental processes, which makes these kind of models interesting tools in research. So the objectives of this study were characterize the regrowth process of pasture grasses under different conditions, simulate the regrowth with the model, the crop grow model, explain plant responses, and create different scenarios using the structure of the model. So to achieve that, we established a field experiment, and the treatments were the combination of two species, Jigs Bermuda grass, a Stoloniferous grass, and Mulatto II brachiaria grass, a bunch-forming grass. Two combinations of light levels under full sun and shaded to 50% of incident light, and two different nitrogen levels, a high nitrogen level, 120 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare after each harvest, and a low nitrogen nitrogen level, 30 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare after each harvest. And we had approximately four harvests on each growing season. Plots were harvested every 28 days to a 10-centimeter stubble, and above and below ground samples were taken at 0, 4, 9, 18, and 28 days after harvest, and all the samples were separated to leaf, stem, root, and crown tissues, and all tissues were analyzed for total non-structural carbohydrates using a spectrophotometry method, total carbon and nitrogen analysis, and carbon and nitrogen stable isotopes using carbon and nitrogen elemental analysis coupled with isotope ratio mass spectrometer. And we used the crop grow perennial forage model to simulate forage growth. Initially, we used coefficients adjusted for Tifton 85 to simulate Jigs growth, and we used the coefficients from Marandu brachiaria grass model to simulate Mulatto II growth. So moving on to the results section, no interactions were observed in total forage harvested, only main effects, and as expected, Mulatto yielded more forage compared to Jigs. Shaded plots had forage production reduced, as well as low nitrogen also had lower production compared to high nitrogen rates. nitrogen also affected specific leaf area of unshaded plots, increasing specific leaf area, but did not affect specific leaf area of shaded leaves. Interestingly, Jigs leaves did not respond to light levels and showed lower specific leaf area compared to Mulatto, and Mulatto responded to light levels with increasing specific leaf area as light levels decreased, and this increase happened 9 days after harvest. Jigs had a much higher fraction of stem in total plant biomass, almost twice as much as Mulatto, but a much lower leaf area index compared to Mulatto. And although these low leaf area index values are still under check, the model is doing a relatively good job on predicting leaf area index, including the low values of cheeks. But the model is still overdoing the nitrogen effect on leaf area index of unshaded plots for both species. The model, with minimal adjustment, we got the model to work and simulate all our treatments just by adjusting mainly leaf parameters of specific leaf area, leaf fraction at the beginning of each regrowth cycle, and leaf appearance rate, rate of leaf photosynthesis, and we got the model doing a good job in simulating the dynamics of regrowth. However, when we first adjusted the model was failing to simulate shaded treatments of jigs, so we had to reduce a little bit maintenance respiration to temperature of jigs. And after we did that, we got the model working pretty well. Some results on total non-structural carbohydrates. In stems, we had a decrease in total non-structural carbohydrates in the stems when we increased nitrogen rates. The same happened when we shaded the plots. Concentration decreased, and the effect was stronger on jigs compared to mulatto. Also, we can see the dynamics across the regrowth cycle. Both species started to mobilize from stems right after defoliation on day zero, but jigs kept mobilizing for longer compared to mulatto. A similar pattern of results were observed in roots, reduced concentration after increasing nitrogen application, reduced concentration under the shade, also a stronger response on jigs, but both species show the same pattern in mobilizing right after defoliation, also from roots. In the crown, however, there was no statistical difference, significant differences across sampling dates, which may indicate that the plants are not mobilizing from the crown tissue for regrowth. And this may be a long-term storage compartment that will only be used after a long-term stress. When we look at our isotopes data, we still have only one treatment. This just came out of the lab. Organic compounds usually have similar isotopic signatures compared to the compounds that originated them. However, enzymes or enzymatic reactions tend to discriminate against the heavy forms of carbon and nitrogen. So when we think about mobilization from reserves, there are extra enzymatic reactions going on. So we expect that the isotopic ratio to be reduced after that. And that's what we observe here. Right after defoliation, the delta C13 decreases both in the leaf and in the stem tissue. And a similar result we observed for nitrogen, delta N15 decreased after right after defoliation for both leaf and stem, which may be an indication that plants are mobilizing really fast right after defoliation. To check that information, we simulated mobilization using the model, and it matches pretty well with our hypothesis here, because mobilization, the red lines, are peaking right after defoliation. This is biomass, the blue lines. And it's peaking right after defoliation all over the growth season. So our next steps will be calibrate the model. We only adjusted the model to get simulations done, but we still have to calibrate more deeply the model, evaluate the model against independent data sets, run a sensitivity analysis to identify key parameters that affect biomass production, and create theoretical genotypes or theoretical plants by playing with carbon and nitrogen mobilization and metabolism parameters in the model, so we can get the best kind of parameter sets to adjust to predict growth of grasses under different management practices. So in conclusion, we were able to simulate two very different plants, two contrasting plants that responded differently to environmental parameters, and we were able to use the model framework to do this the simulations and to not only design the experiment but also to analyze the data and explore the data set we had. With this, I would like to acknowledge all of my friends that helped me collecting the data, the field data, the Embrapa that's funding me, University of Florida, my advisor, Dr. Booty, Dr. Sullenberger, for helping me with this project. Thank you very much. Yeah, we still don't have the whole data set analyzed yet, but our goal is to we don't know if we're going to get to do that, but our goal is to quantify mobilization using isotopic data. We already have TNCs, and that shows us important information about mobilization on carbohydrates. But on nitrogen, it's pretty straightforward, the isotopic signature change. And we believe that we'll be able to track mobilization of nitrogen using isotopic data.
Could there be some discrimination occurring during translocation?
Translocation? Yeah. You mean for nitrogen or carbon?
For both.
Yeah, they will be. They might be going through some enzymatic reactions for translocation. But when we think about mobilization, they will essentially go through extra enzymatic steps, and that will show us the isotopic signature will show us that. Can you say that again?
How many years do you need to calibrate the model?
You know, lots of it.
Oh, okay.
2 years, 3 years, 7 years. How much is enough? How many years is enough?
You know? I think the more data we have, the better. And we'll keep learning from the model every time we have more data. So I guess it's an... we may have an acceptable model, and then we may try to explore different aspects of the same model, and we will need another calibration for that. So it's kind of a continuous process that will never end.
You might say how many data sets on the Marandu. I mean, that's an example.
Right.
All those Brazilian ones.
Yeah, we have been working with Marandu with more than 5 years of data and different data sets from different locations. So the more data we have, the better we'll be. I think an important thing about calibration is if you have contrasting data from different environments, that would cover a wider range, and that would be beneficial to the model.
I think you bring up an interesting problem, because if this is used as an exploratory tool with the data, this is not a statement that it works everywhere else. So you publish a paper like this, and then someone else takes it to the next step.